thinking about mysticism and mental illness. Stanford anthropologist Tanya Lerman is interested in both. She's done participant observation work with evangelical Christians, and she's also done cross-cultural studies of schizophrenics who hear voices. She told Steve Paulson they are not at all the same, but they do have a few things in common.
So people who meet criteria for schizophrenia, for example, often have an array of auditory experiences. So they can hear murmurings, they can hear screeching, they'll talk about a voice jumping from one person to another person, and they hear voices. So they will say that they hear a voice that's outside of themselves and sometimes a voice that's inside of themselves. So I was curious about the question of whether this experience would be different in other parts of the world. And I did this with some of my colleagues in South Asia and in Ghana. We interviewed people here in the Bay Area, and I interviewed people in a psychiatric hospital in Ghana and in a psychiatric treatment program in Chennai, in South India. And the question was, what do people say that their voices say? And I was struck by the differences. We found that in the American setting, people hated their voices. Not one person said that their predominant experience was positive.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I assume they had been diagnosed as mentally ill.
All these people have been diagnosed with as mentally ill. Everybody's sitting in a hospital. They all carry a diagnosis of schizophrenia. They're all on medication. So in some basic way, they're all the same kind of person with the same kind of illness. But the voices in Ghana and in Chennai were more likable. And people sometimes liked them even if they didn't like what the voice was saying.
That's fascinating. So a totally different cultural take on whether these voices are damaging or not.
Well, not totally different. So everybody around the person agreed that they were ill, and the person themselves, they knew they had a problem. But they did sometimes say, you know, with all these problems, it's these voices that have kept me alive till now. Half the sample in Accra said that they heard God speaking. And God would tell them not to pay attention to their demonic experiences. In Chennai, people were more likely to hear their relatives. They might really think their relatives were very annoying, but their relatives told them not to drink, not to smoke. They told them to do all these chores. So there was a very different quality than this American experience. And so, you know, the American subjects that I spoke with, their identity had become the identity of somebody with schizophrenia, and that was different from the others. You know, there was they had no other good way of conceiving of their experiences except through a diagnostic lens.
Right.
Where that more of the folks in Accra and Chennai, they knew they had a problem. But the voices weren't always identified with a problem, and the voices sometimes helped them to cope with a problem.
Now, you wear a couple of hats in your work as an anthropologist. You also study religious experience, and you did a fascinating study of evangelical Christians where you spent 2 years as a participant observer. What were you trying to find out?
So I was really trying to find out the question, how does the immaterial or the divine or the supernatural, how does that become real to people? This is not the question of whether the supernatural is real or whether the divine is real. This is the question of how God becomes so real to people so that they experience God as standing by their side. The kind of church I went to would be called a charismatic evangelical church. People talk about God as talking to them, as interacting with them. They're saying things like, I recognize God's voice the way I recognize my mom's voice on the phone.
So God is sort of like your best friend, or maybe maybe more like your therapist, someone who's going to make you feel better.
All of those. You know, it wasn't as if people had auditory experiences all the time, and that was not what people thought of themselves as developing, although they sometimes did hear God speak in an audible voice. But it was more learning to pick out what you might have thought of as your own thoughts in your mind and coming to recognize that they might be God's thoughts. I mean, they were also pretty sophisticated about this. So, you know,
so these were not uneducated, illiterate people you're talking about here.
No, these are super educated, very skilled people, university trained people.
So how do they develop the skill of talking with God?
So if you're first looking for certain kinds of thoughts, you're looking for thoughts that pop out, that feel more spontaneous, that feel stronger than other thoughts, then they'll ask, okay, which of these thoughts is the kind of thing that God would say? You know, so one man said to me, there was this time when his parents were getting divorced, and I think he was something like, you know, 10 years old, and he was terribly upset, and he was in his bed at night, and he thought he heard a voice say, I am with you, something like that. And it was very powerful. It was very comforting. It felt very real to him. And he'd been talking to God for 3 decades by the time that I met him. And he said, you know, that one, I'm sure that was for real. Everything else might just be a mistake.
Well, one thing that's so fascinating about what you're saying is, I mean, there is a very intentional act of imagining going on here.
Yes.
And in fact, I mean, you write about the famous Christian writer C.S. Lewis, who had a chapter mm-hmm. in his book Mere Christianity called Let Us Pretend.
Mm-hmm.
What was he saying we should pretend about?
So he was saying you should pretend in order to experience as real. What I find fascinating about Lewis is that the use of the imagination to experience God has always been part of Christianity. I mean, God is immaterial. You need to use your capacity to represent images and words in order to pray, in order to represent what God is saying to you. So you're using your imagination. There's something that happened in the, you know, in the modern era that we came to think of imagination as something that was about falseness. And so,
well, and it's also it's what kids do. I mean, kids have imaginary right. friends, and then, you know, we're supposed to grow out of that and become rational, sensible adults.
Mm-hmm. But using the imagination to interact with God, to allow God to be imprinted in your inner world. And what I've found out is that this practice of using your imagination actually does help you to experience what you must imagine as being more real. It somehow comes alive to you.
Well, I mean, but then the question is, these evangelical Christians you were hanging out with, did they think of these encounters with God as real or as fictional?
Both. It seemed to me when I talked to people, I mean, people were very, very comfortable saying that God was real. God existed. But they were also talking to God about the little things. So they were asking God what shirt they should wear in the morning and getting an answer. They would go on dates with God. So mostly the women, but they would, you know, so you'd get somebody who would get one sandwich, go down to the, you know, the park bench and sit there in the park with God with his arm around her shoulders. And they're talking about the day. But the God that is really emphasized in these churches is a friend, a therapist, a pal, somebody who's always available, always has your best interests in mind, you know, is kind of like a great big teddy bear.
Hmm. You ran an experiment, a psychological test to probe the power of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe what you did?
So I got over 100 people into my office, and I'd made these exercises, and they were half an hour long, and they were sort of prayer-like experiences. Anyway, I randomized people into a group that would listen to those half-hour prayer-like experiences every day, or a group that was listening to half-hour lectures from the teaching company about the Gospels. And the rule was half an hour a day, 6 days a week for a month. And it turned out that the folks in the prayer condition were more likely to say that their mental images were more vivid. They were more likely to say that God had become more person-like, that they had a more playful relationship with God. They're also more likely to report these sort of odd, unusual, intense spiritual experiences, powerful rushes of emotion, a sense that God was near, tangibly present to you, almost as if you knew exactly where he was standing in the room.
Right. So you could basically teach yourself to become well, more adept at communicating with God, having these powerful experiences.
Absolutely.
But I have to say, it also sounds like a recipe for possibly inviting the delusional into your life. I mean, if you keep imagining something is real and you're getting constant affirmation from people around you, it will become real in your mind, right?
Well, yes. Except that, you know, they had these vivid experiences of God, but they also had a pretty strong, what you might call a reality frame. So if they did feel that God was telling them to start a school or to, you know, move to Los Angeles, they were pretty good at checking in with other people to see if this made sense. You know, they could feel that God was telling them something, but they also always carried within the sense of questioning of whether that was really God or whether it was themselves.
Now, you've said that you participated in a lot of these activities. You joined prayer mm-hmm. groups. Did you have powerful experiences yourself during prayer?
I came to have experiences that I would describe as God speaking to me. And I would have this sense of, you know, a peace and a calm during prayer in some of these settings.
So it felt like you encountered God.
I do use that language.
You finished this study a few years ago. Do you still mm-hmm. pray?
I do something like praying, yes. So I've switched more recently to using mindfulness for various reasons. I thought it would be kind of an interesting thing to do. Mm-hmm. But I still have a spiritual practice.
Tanya Lerman is an anthropologist at Stanford University, and she's the author of When God Talks Back. She spoke with Steve Paulson.